show.
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 74. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. I don't usually do topical stuff because it's not really my gig, but I read something interesting about pumpkins the other day, and it mostly had to do with pumpkin beer. Now, if you're a craft beer nerd or some sort of craft beer dweeb like I am, you know, perhaps you went to various tastings during Great American Beer Fest week. Maybe you went to Great American Beer Fest itself. I did not, because I'm still hungover from going in 2006 when I was kind of a novice, much younger, therefore much dumber. But I did manage to hit up a few things around town. Finally got a Three Floyds Zombie Dust, and I will tell you that is one beer that lives up to the hype. It was fantastic, probably the best IPA I think I've ever had in my life. Also caught some beers from Cigar City out of Tampa, Bell's out of Michigan, and a couple of others. Just around town, you could find beers that you can't normally get, and it was really exciting, really fun. During the fall, and I'll just note, by the way, that pumpkin beers tend to divide beer geeks. There are those who think it's gimmicky and think it's dumb, and then there are those who go, you know what, if you're trying to convert people into craft beer, there's like the evangelical side of the craft beer movement, then pumpkin beers are a nice entree to do that, right? It's sort of accessible, it's sort of everything else is pumpkin anyway. Pumpkin spice lattes, people lose their mind over. I don't really drink coffee, so I don't care one way or the other. But pumpkin beers, why did they come out so early this year? Well, according to an article I read, we had a warmer than normal summer, and so pumpkins ended up ripening early. So ergo, you're seeing a lot more pumpkin beers here. Kristen was really upset one time. She said, ugh, I know this is canned pumpkin because pumpkins aren't harvested yet. Well, turns out, yes, they were. But more importantly, you're getting canned pumpkin anyway because if you're trying to use real pumpkin in a mash, it's impossible. And it's just a nightmare. We've heard that from a couple of brewing people. There you go. There's a couple of notes about pumpkin beers. Now, why do I bring this up? The reason I bring it up is because Great American Beer Fest week is a huge week for Denver. Just bearded guys and all sorts of geeks who love different kinds of obscure beer styles like Berliner Weisses and Gozas and, you know, God knows what else. They all descend upon the city. And the city has so much stuff like that. Nuggets, Avalanche, Broncos, Rockies, hiking. There's the beautiful mountains right nearby. Skiing. We have the Denver Center for Performing Arts. There is so much to do at any given time in Denver, you wonder how a small business owner might make it. And that brings me to this week's guests. We have Eric Ferrone and Denise Mays. They are the co-owners and co-founders of the Bovine Metropolis Theater. Now, what is that? If you haven't heard of it, you should, because it's excellent. The Bovine Metropolis does improv shows, they do improv training, and they do corporate trainings. Now, just like any theater owner, and this comes up in the podcast, one of the challenges is getting people in the door. But Denise, as executive producer, makes no excuses. She said, everyone is competing against everyone else all the time. And it's one of the things we love about Denver. There is so much to do. There is so much cool stuff. There are so many cool people. How do you get people in? Well, they do it by providing some of the best improv you will see anywhere. Now, I say that might be a little bit biased, but then again, this isn't journalism. I just completed level one of their improv training, and it was some of the most fun I've ever had. I did it Wednesday nights, and I always looked forward to Wednesdays and going in there and being with a bunch of other goofy people, getting up, basically shedding your inhibitions, letting your id run wild, and saying yes and. That is the fundamental principle of improv, saying yes and. Someone gives you a suggestion, and you say yes and then you build on it. It's how scenes get built. It's how live theater happens in the moment, without a script, without preparation, without any preconceived notion of where it's going to go. And this week, we talk about their origins, how they got into improv. Eric's story is particularly fascinating. He knew he wanted to be on stage. He wanted to perform. He was kind of a guy who was always on, but he didn't want to learn lines, and he didn't want to be himself. So you don't want to do like stand-up. You don't want to be yourself, but you don't want to learn lines. Isn't that sort of, don't those cancel each other out? Doesn't that preclude you from doing this? Well, he didn't know what he wanted yet, and I don't want to step on the story too much, but eventually he found improv, went to Chicago, got trained up, ended up back in Denver, met Denise, and that is how the Bovine Metropolis got born. So they take us through that journey. They take us through what their trainings are like. They take us through why their corporate trainings are one of the biggest sectors of their business, why it matters. I just left a corporation that certainly had some challenges, all corporations do, and they talk about transforming cultures. I mean, there are ways that you can use improv principles to improve skill sets of your various employees in whatever way you kind of want to, but transforming cultures is at the heart of what they want to do. And if you take an improv sort of mindset, if you say yes and, you can create a really, really cool culture that way. So we talk about training, we talk about shows, and we talk about transforming corporate cultures. It's just an amazing episode with two great people who I adore very much, and I cannot recommend the Bovine Metropolis enough. Check them out on the web, bovinemetropolis.com, and you can find a lineup of their shows. You can find a description of their course offerings. There's just tons and tons there, something almost every night of the week. They are great people, and this is a wonderful episode. Before we get to it, let's give some love to our sponsor, 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. I talk about them every single week and the way that they can solve problems for you. If you need to get your message in front of a group of people, if you want to do some web marketing, if you want to do some social media advertising, if you want to do some coalition building, they're really, really good at that. And additionally, they support this podcast by sponsoring, and then they also give us tech support. So, for instance, I heard from some of you that you were frustrated that not every episode of the back catalog is available on iTunes. So I hit up Zach. I said, Zach, what's going on here? What's the problem? And he figured it out. Now all episodes should be available on iTunes. If you go there and you don't find them, we'll get it fixed. But I think Zach has a fix. I think we're good to go. You can find every single episode of ours on iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher. Just search John of All Trades. Every episode is always and forever hosted on the website, johnofalltrades.us, J-O-N of all trades.us. That brings us to this week. Episode 74 of the podcast is with Eric Ferrone and Denise Mays, the co-founders of the Bovine Metropolis Theater. That episode starts right now.
I would say seasons, would you say, Eric, where we have like a fall lineup and then ongoing shows and then grad shows, where we also have classes that graduate through our program and they put up a four-week run.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's really fun. And then on Tuesday nights, we're always trying something new.
Wow.
Yeah.
So sitting here in the Bovine Metropolis with Denise Mays, Eric Ferrone, the co-owners, co-founders?
Yeah.
How do you want to put that?
Sure.
Okay. Of the Bovine Metropolis, thanks for taking the time. I know you guys have a lot going on, and I know that because I just finished level one here a couple of weeks ago.
How was that?
It was terrific. It was so much fun. Yeah. And we had a big class, too. We started with like 15 or 16. By the end, I think we were down to about 12. Does that usually happen? Just a handful of folks drop out?
Yeah, you always have attrition, especially at the first two levels. People come in, they sign up for classes, they're all excited. And a lot of people get scared. A lot of people, you know, life just happens. We have some attrition in the later levels too, like 3, 4, and 5. But most of that is because people are moving, getting married, or have a trip that they've planned forever, and they're just not going to be they're here, so...
Okay, I gotcha. And it was funny, the people who sort of faded away, this wasn't true of all of them, the people who faded away didn't seem to be taking to it as much. Like we had one game where each sentence, you ping pong sentences, and each sentence started with the next progressive letter of the alphabet. And you could see people kind of just trying to think of the alphabet instead of fully involving themselves in it. And you're watching them and they go, what is the next letter up there? And you go, it's the alphabet. Why is this? But I think the pressure of being up there in front of people and, you know, some people maybe trying to be funny rather than finding the moment, it's just too much for them. And it was kind of strange to see.
It's definitely different. I mean, for most, many, many people, their day-to-day, they don't improvise or need to.
Right.
You know,
they should become parents.
Yes, exactly. Actually, I think parenting is the ultimate improv gig. Because
I've found that.
Yeah, you need to be able to go with the flow. It's a dance. Right. I think raising children is a dance, and sometimes you lead, sometimes they lead, and you just go with the flow. But I think You know, most people, their day-to-day is pretty much laid out for them. Do A, B, C, 1, 2, 3.
Right.
There's definitely a workflow in terms of what your day is like. And so when they step into this world, it's very uncomfortable for some.
Sure.
Very uncomfortable.
Well, and, you know, it's all about getting out of your own way. It's all about stopping self-editing and just being authentically yourself and getting rid of that little voice that has judgment that says, I'm not good enough, or I'm a rock star.
Or that's dumb, I'm not going to say that.
Well, that's not
funny. What are people going to think of that? That happens all the time. And it's this voice that we have in our heads that, for whatever reasons, it's there and it's persistent.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you'll be up there and I'm standing there with someone who I don't know very well. And our instructor, Kim Cutt, by the way, who was fantastic. I just like to put a plug in there.
She's
thank
wonderful.
You. Thank you. We think the world
delight.
Of her. Thank you.
Yeah, just an absolute ray of sunshine. But so we're standing there, and the suggestion came out. You guys are in on the prairie in a cemetery, which I didn't mean for that to rhyme. That was weird. But so I'm standing there, and my scene partner just starts digging a grave. First thing that popped in my head, I go, you know, your wife was a real pain in the ass. And I thought, what am I saying? Like, that's awful. Got a huge laugh, though.
Yeah.
And it's not something you would say in polite company, but that's one of the beauties of taking something like this is it's almost like you let your id sort of run wild, which is so fun.
Yeah, it's about letting those people that are inside of you that we've tapped down and repressed, letting them have a little time to see the sunlight.
Right.
And then, you know, when we go back to work, we'll shove them down again and then repress them a little bit more. But it's about getting in touch with your emotions, getting in touch with all aspects of yourself. But, you know, that thing that you said where it's like, I didn't even think about it. I didn't know what I was saying.
Right.
That's the part we're trying to get in touch with. So many people feel like they have to think about what they're saying, which is weird because that means you're thinking about how to use your brain. Whereas, you know, your brain. So if I always say it's like using your software to control your hardware.
Oh, weird.
And it's an inefficient use of your space.
Yeah.
So if you just get rid of that software program that edits you and bypass it, you're still the same person. It's just that you are connected to what you're saying and you don't have that judgment center.
And that's really well put because I work in PR, so I'm constantly editing and trying to figure out the best way to present something. And I found one of the easiest ways to do that is almost to let my id run wild. I go, what do I actually want to say in this press release about these people who I may or may not like? And then I just get it out. And then as soon as I get it out, I can almost get to a deeper truth from that point forward. Is
right.
that sort of what you're describing? I mean, it's a reverse way of what you're describing.
Yeah, and I think that's a way of breaking down that filter is what you're talking about. And that's great. Because, yeah, we want to break down that. We want to break down those things that you've been taught from the time you were going through childhood. No, don't say that. Don't do that. Don't touch that. And those build up a wall. And so we are trying to break down that wall and trying to get you in touch with you and trying to get people to be more authentic.
Well, and to that end, we do need to teach children, don't touch that. Don't say that.
Yeah.
Be polite. However, what I think they do is they do create barriers to being yourself. And I think that it's, you know, there's absolutely a place for rules in our society. But what improv does, though, is it creates a balance. It creates a balance on really who we are. And we don't know always how to do that. And this is really one great
right.
tool to do it.
And there are even rules in improv, so.
Well, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find when people do improv for a long time and they get to some of the more advanced levels, they almost have a hard time turning that off? Are they fundamentally changed after doing this for some time?
I have been. But I've been fundamentally changed in a different way.
Yeah.
Than what you describe.
The way
I've been changed, I think, is I was always one of those people that was always on.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Life of the party, like, just, you know, come on, I'm here, let's do it.
Like you're Jonathan Winters or something. Yeah,
right? Exactly. No, you can't turn me
or
off.
Or even like a Robin Williams. Robin Williams can, you know, he always would kind of come off just really manic and just right there. And, you know, so you'll...
Yeah, like...
But I didn't know you then, so...
Okay.
So, but the process of being up on stage and letting myself express myself and getting out there and getting that energy out and being connected, it's changed me, and I don't have to do that anymore. And I don't have to, and improv's about not being center stage. Improv's about being support, and it's about and you know what we're about here is creating ensembles with a focus on support. And so, you know, a lot of people think that great teams are individuals that come together and work. But I mean, look at Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, he's had great teams, and they're always dysfunctional. And he would come into these great teams, and he'd just get them to all be focused on supporting and winning as a group.
You look at the Golden State Warriors from this last year.
Yeah.
They were great to watch. And as a team, they were just so much fun.
And they didn't have, they had one star on that team.
Yeah, Steph Curry.
Yeah, but everybody else was just, it was just about passing the ball and playing good fundamentals.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when we look at our society, too often we think of group as a gathering of great individuals. Mm. And yet, if you get a gathering of a diverse individuals who all have the same goal, that is not to support their egos, but to support the common goal, you can get a lot more accomplished, and you can get greatness accomplished.
You know, you mentioned support. There was another game that we played in the first level, and we're all standing in a circle, and someone would go in the middle and start singing, which singing for most people is just terrifying. You don't sing in front of other people. I certainly don't. And Kim, our instructor, said, don't leave them hanging out there for too long.
Right.
Because you'll die slowly, just not remembering the words of this song. Just if you can't think of anything, just go out there and start singing Jingle Bells. And just support your team that way. And that made it a lot of fun because, and I'm, you know what, as I'm just going stream of consciousness here, every email that you send to me is signed Got Your Back.
Yeah.
Which I think is so cool. But you were pointing at the board.
Yeah.
Would you explain that?
Yes.
Since this is radio, not television?
Yes, absolutely. There is a big whiteboard in our office here. And what we do periodically is we continue to redefine and focus who we are.
Right.
And so really what we do, from a broad sense to industry phrasing, we really, what do we do? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And what we do is we create an atmosphere that produces exceptional ensembles. Okay, broadly speaking. So that means for stage, in classes, for businesses. We teach this to businesses, which is amazing. And then what
I want to talk about that.
Oh, definitely. Wonderful. It's actually one of our favorite things to talk about. So getting more specific to what does that mean when we break down to improv jargon is really what that means is we're a Spolin theater, and Viola Spolin is really one of the creators and the godmothers of improvisation, modern improvisation, theatrical, that focuses the group mind, which is what improv speak, and to support, to start strong, and to have fun. So these are the mindsets that we have when we talk to people, when we tell people who we are and what we do. Because other theaters do other things. They focus on other things. But this is who we are.
Yeah,
we do.
Some improv theaters focus on, we want to get you funny. And some improv, places are focused on, we want to get you in touch with your emotions.
Okay.
And some are like, let's have you relive your old experiences and let you talk to the person in that situation and use it as a therapy.
Sure, which is very effective. Or also some theaters are, we'll make you famous.
Huh.
And so,
more about fame.
Okay.
Yeah.
Notoriety.
Well, the nice thing about improv is it's like any philosophy in that what you want to get out of it is what you will get out of it.
Mm.
And so both Denise and I are from the corporate training world, and she was a corporate trainer for 7 years. I was a corporate trainer for 3 years before we opened this place. And when I do my corporate training, I'd be, well, today we're going to teach you the 7 effective habits for experiential interview process.
Right.
And then I would do PowerPoints, and I'd show them the 7 slides, and I'd talk about each one. And then at the end of the day, I'd be like, those were the 7 effective habits to getting a good experiential interview. And you must do this.
Right.
Improv is just the opposite. Improv is like, what do you want to get out of it?
What did you discover? What did you see?
Right.
How did that feel? How uncomfortable are you? And those are the questions that we ask in our training. And those are the goals versus saying, this is how you do improv. We don't teach you how that.
Okay.
That's not what we do.
And also, if you want to take it because you want to get better at writing, you see it through a writer's lens. If you want to take it because you're a presentation coach,
right?
You're like, oh, I could use that exercise to help my clients.
Yeah, yeah.
And each person that comes into it, and we still have people that are like, I want to perform.
Right, great.
Good.
You're in the right place. Yeah. You're in the right place.
I want to get on stage.
We want you on stage.
We want people that want to be on stage. We want them on stage.
Of course. I mean, that's another part of your business, because you have classes, and you said there's five levels of classes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give a brief breakdown of what each of those, like what the thrust of each of those classes is?
Sure. Each level, we have five levels, is 8 weeks. The first level is where everybody starts, no matter what your background is, no matter what kind of improv experience or theater experience you have.
So someone walks in here from the groundlings, mm-hmm. you still put them through level one?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have what's called a beginner's mindset here, which means that when you have the mindset of a beginner, always exploring, always learning, there's always ways to do something new, then you're in the right place.
Okay, cool.
So everybody starts at level one.
Got it.
And so in level one, we work on object work, which is learning how to hold invisible objects, because an improv stage is an empty stage.
Yeah.
We don't have elaborate sets or costumes or set pieces. And so we create that, and the audience is along the ride with us. We also learn the basic tenets of improv, saying yes and, saying not saying no to your partner. What are some other ones?
No questions.
Oh, yeah.
And we also are a clean theater here, so we also tell people no swearing. And the reason we do that is because swearing is the same as questions. If you ask a question, it's putting the work on your partner, and it's me trying to deflect.
Right.
And if I'm swearing, sometimes new players especially swear to get a reaction from the audience rather
right.
than swear as in character. And swearing in character, we don't mind.
But sure.
Do you try to manipulate the audience? That offends me.
Well, and it's also too. I think it's something that you learn. It's a muscle. Improvisation is a muscle, and
yeah.
you learn what is a fear-based reaction. And so now we're getting a little deeper. We're just playing.
Yeah.
This is just fun.
Yeah,
right.
This is just fun. But really, what we're talking about is we're talking about dealing with your fear, and going recognizing what those are and what you tend to do. What is your go-to
right.
defense mechanism? So that's what level one is.
And then also a little bit about the structure of scenes, mm. how scenes are structured.
Oh, sure.
And then also end it with getting back to having your object work and not talking about what you're doing on stage.
Right. Not narrating that, you know, right. we're washing this car, and, you know, get me more soap. And like,
oh,
that's
my gosh.
Terribly interesting.
You're a tall man with a beard. Oh.
Or,
that's
or
fascinating
worse yet,
theater.
Oh, look, you're a woman with a beard.
Oh, waka waka.
You know, that's another thing that's like
And
really
it's definitely our style.
Sure.
I have to say, you know, you will see other kinds of theater and other kinds of improv oh. where they do talk about what they're doing. But
yeah.
that's not what we teach. We feel like when you can get past that, then you can get to the scenes and you can get to what the relationship is about in that scene.
And there's other theaters that they don't have characters and it's just two people standing up there trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And it's
and that's fine too.
That's just not what we do.
That's not what we go back to a teaching ensemble work, and the way you teach ensemble work is not talk about what you're doing.
Well, sure. And you know, going back to the writing thing, my writing partner, I used to coach him because, you know, we do a lot of pop culture criticism and reviews, and I go, "Dude, go beyond describing." Like, you're describing the plot, you're describing what happens. I know that, or I can find that elsewhere. How did it make you feel?
Yeah.
Like, what are you taking away from this? And that's also what you're describing, which
right.
I think is important.
What are your emotions?
What is the emotional
yeah.
truth to
How does
whatever
this
you're
make
doing?
You feel?
Which takes us to level two.
Which
okay,
takes
perfect.
Us to level two, which is a great segue. So now we've got the basics. So now we're ready to add on, and what we kind of call it is another ball in the air or another plate to spin. So level two is all about characters. So now you know how scene works. Now you know object work. Now let's make you three-dimensional.
Mm.
So let's have characters that are rich and interesting and fascinating and have a story to tell.
And that are your own.
Okay.
We don't want caricatures. We don't want other people's movie characters. Like, we don't want you bringing somebody from, you know, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, please don't do Stewie from Family Guy.
Exactly. We want to see the people that live inside of you, and we want to see the people that are, you know, are part of your personality and how you grew up. And, you know, that, because we want to see rich tapestry of you.
Yeah.
And that's just fascinating. Like, there's a woman here at the theater, her mother is Korean. And she has this wonderful character that she created that's based on her mother. And it is fascinating to hear her talk about, you know, to hear her be this woman. And she is fascinating to see how she sees the world and that filter that she sees it in. That's interesting. We all know Stewie and we all know Arnold Schwarzenegger. We know all of those characters and they're two-dimensional because we don't know them.
Yeah.
But these are three-dimensional. So we go through all these exercises where we learn, oh, how do you find your characters? Some people find them in their body. Some people find them in a costume piece. Some people start with an idea or an emotion or even an animal.
And once again, to get to the point of another thing that differentiates us is that we're really about people being that character rather than making fun of that character.
Yeah.
So a great example is Stephen Colbert when he was had the Colbert Report.
Yeah.
He was that character and was, you know, just, he did not make fun of that character. He never went like, aren't I stupid? But it was, you know, just the things he did, he just didn't understand in a very funny way.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
and he was doing it very intentionally.
Yes.
But you're right. He didn't, he wasn't, you know, garish about it. He wasn't condescending to that character.
No.
Is what you're describing.
Right. He didn't have any hate or vile for that character.
Right.
He actually could see the humanity in that character. And we want to see humanity in all of our characters.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And along that same vein, it's also respect for the character and not stepping outside of the scene.
Right.
It's not breaking character and saying, wasn't I funny? That was really funny what I just did.
Or my accent is different now than it was.
Oh my gosh! I started out Irish and now I'm English. And I think I'm going to be Scottish next.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's what that is that's taking yourself outside of the scene, and it's breaking character, and it's not staying in the realms of your reality that you've created on stage. Mm-hmm. And so we teach. Okay, now you've got the basics of improv. You've got object work. You've got characters. Now what are you going to do with all those?
Level three.
How great that you just asked. And so level three is all about taking those balls in the air, and now we're going to start on scene work.
Mm.
So this is the beginning level of scene work, and this is a lot of fun stuff. There's a lot of stuff to discover.
It's fun. And because it's like, I found my characters, I found my locations. How do I find you and your location and your characters?
And how do they interact?
And the interesting thing is, you know, a lot of people can teach scene work a lot of different ways. The way we teach it is by focus, by give and take, by listening, and it goes back to this on building strong ensembles again.
Right.
It's a lot of, I hear what you're going to say, then I yes and it, and I add something too. And what that does is it also cuts off that, you know, prefrontal cortex, that judgment center in your brain, because I'm listening so intently, I can't judge you. And so I just have to react to what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And so these are muscles that take work. These are not things, usually, like, if you go to a cocktail party, most people when they go to a cocktail party, they're like, I'll just wait for my turn to say, oh, I'll tell that clever story that I used to have of when I touched a monkey or whatever it is. okay, well, that might not be a true story.
Did you see the deleted scene in Pulp Fiction where Mia Wallace is interviewing Vincent before he takes her out to Jackrabbit Slim's?
No. Mm.
And one of the questions she asks him, and this is something that, it's one of those things you just can't shake, that you always remember. She says, do you listen or do you wait to talk?
Mm.
And he says, I wait to talk, but I'm trying harder to listen. Which
is everybody, pretty much.
That's pretty much everyone. Although doing this podcast has really helped me listen. Because how often do you really get to sit with people like this and talk for just an hour? Have a focused, direct conversation where nothing's interrupting you. And I think it helps that it's on the record because you tend to be more focused. But those muscles have applied to me, and I can sit and listen to people now, and I don't feel compelled to talk necessarily. It's spectacular. I love it. So,
well, and yeah, that's so. Level three is about how do I find each other, and level four is like, let's get lots of reps, let's get lots of practice, and let's do lots of situations. So we do what we call long form improvisation, which was started in Chicago, or actually started before Chicago, but it was started with Del Close.
Okay.
And it's taking one suggestion and just getting into these characters' lives and seeing multiple scenes and seeing characters come back and having a progression and themes and narratives and exploring those. And so we also start with a pop. We like to start in the middle, like we say.
Start strong. Number two, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So starting last night, and it's hard. Last night I was performing and I started singing with, good morning. And I'm like, oh. I mean, I would stab my eyes out. If I was directing that, I would have given myself a note. And I have given myself that note.
Clearly, you're flagellating yourself.
I'm not happy with that move. But we want to start with something where I'm in the location and I look at you and I get a feeling from you, and then I express something that has the flavor of that feeling.
Guy digging your grave. Your wife was a pain in the ass.
That's a great start, by
the way. Okay, fantastic.
And it's a great start for several reasons. One is I've seen 1,000 digging hole scenes, and 9 times out of 10 it becomes about, that hole's not deep enough, that hole's too deep, and we're talking about what we're doing.
You're talking about the hole.
And you're talking about what you're doing. Yeah. But when you're like, your wife was a pain in the ass, well, now you're talking about your relationship.
Yeah.
You got a lot of backstory. It becomes an interesting, and I'm drawn in right away.
And I think we were brothers too. But, so I can't even remember. You know, you do a billion scenes when you're in class, but
yeah,
I happen to remember that one. So getting at bats and finding the narrative. Sorry, I lost the thread of what you were saying.
I was talking about level 4,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
how it's all about just finding narrative improv and doing lots of scenes, and then. Level 5.
So level 5 says, okay, look at all these amazing things you've just done over the past 8 months. And let's now change what you're doing. Instead of having an instructor, you're going to have a director. Mm. And what you're going to do is you're going to create your own show based on your group's strengths. Mm. So do you have people in the group that like to sing? Do you have people in the group that love characters? Do you have people in the group that like to tell story-based that you do story-based improv.
That can play an instrument or do whatever, speak Spanish.
Whatever, juggle, seriously, whatever. And then what we do is then the director, based on these strengths of the group, puts together a long-form show. And so we have two different acts. They typically have two different long-forms or two different ideas. And then for 8 weeks, what we do is instead of teach, we practice and we rehearse and we figure out this works, this doesn't work, and you can only do that by embodying it, which is true for all of our improv. So you must feel, what does this feel like to do it? And so we're working toward a performance. We're now working as an ensemble. We're not individuals taking classes anymore. Now we're working toward a performance, which is a fantastic experience for our students because they get to switch gears.
Yeah. One question I have, though, is because what you're describing, you know, you rehearse, you get a show together, it's sort of a Zen process. Who do we have? What strengths do we have? Okay, then based on that, this is the show we're going to do. How do you sort of do that without it becoming like a sketch comedy show?
It's all improvisational.
Right.
So what you'll have is what they call a form. Mm-hmm. And what a form is
like a herald?
A herald is a form, and for those who don't know, a herald is the original long form. And what a herald is simply is a game, group game, information gathering game at the start, then scene A, B, C, and then another game, then scene A prime, B prime, C prime, another game, and then A double prime, C double prime, B double prime, C double prime.
But the content of those is unknown.
Right.
So you have like a skeleton,
mm-hmm. right?
But with, and then you come in and put the meat on the bones, and at the end you go, here's our thing.
And the meat's different every night. And if you get really good, the skeleton changes too.
Okay.
And so like a herald that follows that form is not usually a very good herald.
Okay.
Because it's a herald with training wheels. And it's people who are really not comfortable yet.
Yeah.
Heralds that don't necessarily follow that form just go where the content drives them. Now you're flying. Now you're improvising.
I gotcha. I saw a herald. I was in Chicago earlier this year, and I went to the I.O., and I saw a team do a herald. There were two teams, actually. The first team, I think, not as much experience, a little weaker. Second team just crushed it. It was outrageous. They took, I think, one suggestion at the very beginning and then just built out a whole thing that all came together. And it was like an episode of Seinfeld.
That's what a herald is.
It was amazing.
All heralds, and actually a lot of people think that Seinfeld's based on a herald.
I've never heard that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
But that's what I thought, because I thought you have these little threads of subplots, and the way they weaved them all back together at the end was, it was beautiful. It was like watching jazz.
Yeah.
So.
And here's the thing, you know, I studied in Chicago, and that's where I learned, and you go to do heralds, you do heralds yourself, and the thing is the bad ones go by the wayside, but the good ones, you know, I still have several shows in my head that I've done, several shows in my head that I've seen,
yeah.
that I'm just like, they're still there.
a thing of beauty is a joy forever, right?
Yes.
It is.
It's like watching someone. There was a group called The Family in Chicago that used to play, and about half of them are on TV right now or movies.
Right.
But when they were on, it was like watching people build a cathedral together, one brick at a time, without a blueprint. It was amazing.
Wow.
And so that's, you know, and our goal is to get that here too with our shows. But we also do, besides classes and shows, we also do a lot of corporate training.
We do. So really, we kind of think of it as like a three-legged stool.
Okay.
So we have our productions, our shows. We have our improv classes, which prepare people for the stage. And then we train individual groups. So businesses, organizations, to take these same exact tenets, and apply them to the workplace, which is so fundamentally earth-shattering for a lot of these environments. Some of them not so much so. Some of them embrace it, and they're the real successful groups. You know, you see a lot of really progressive environments using improvisation and these tenets to work together as teams.
So how does the training change, or how do you modify it for people who say, I'm interested in improv, I want to learn more about improv, scene work, whatever, versus, you know, you have a corporation that ostensibly probably has some sort of business goal undergirding their desire to take this class. How does the training shift in that regard?
How the training shifts in that regard is that when you come in and take an improv class, I ask what you want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And then we teach the classes. And then hopefully you get that out of it. You'll get more. Believe me, you will. But when you, I only have 3.5 hours or 6 hours. And when we do it, we only train, you know, we'd like to get more partnerships developed where we come in and help really change cultures.
Right.
But really, a lot of times we're in a Band-Aid situation where we've got a new team that's coming together and we're just not functioning. Or we have presentations, we do presentations, and our presentations are stagnant because our people are, you know, construction workers or whatever, and they're not.
They're engineers.
Exactly, and they're not used to presentations. However, they have to give the presentations to the client in order to get these $20 million contracts.
Yeah.
And so how do I get those people more integrated? When we get a client, Denise will do a quick interview with them, and then once we get on board, she'll give me her notes and let me know, and then I usually talk to the client, and I'm like, specifically, what needs to be our takeaways?
Yeah.
And
what are the deliverables that you want?
Exactly. And then when, instead of having the person in class pull the deliverables out, we laser our delivery to deliver those. We still don't tell people how to, you know, run their engineering business.
We don't know how to do that.
No.
Yeah, we know how to run improv.
Well, and like anything else, you're trying to help them achieve a goal, but ultimately they have to arrive at it on their own.
Exactly.
I mean, they have to fill in the enthymeme at the end for themselves.
And that's what's great about improvisation is, instead, you know, like I said, we both were corporate trainers and we both did the PowerPoints. But the great thing about improvisation is you embody it. And so anything that you embody, it becomes truth to you.
Yeah.
So instead of me showing you the 7 principles of whatever you need to do, and then you understanding them cognitively, and then believing them and trying to embody them, improvisational workshops flip it on its head. You experience it.
Yeah.
And you find that this is easier, more integrated for you, and more impactful for you. And then we say why it's important in improvisation. And then we have you make a bridge to your work. And when you make the bridge to your work, then you own that.
No, that makes good sense. I and so eloquently stated, too.
Well, thank you.
If you don't have materials that outline that very thing, you should put that on a flyer. Because that was terrific. I recently left corporate, and when I was doing internal trainings, it's so funny hearing you guys talk about being a corporate trainer, because my wife and I are both corporate trainers too. So I spent 16 months, and over that 16 months, I gave approximately 25 internal trainings. And it was fine. I'd give them the info. You have to sort of do the curriculum first. But at the end, I made them spit it back at me. I made them take the info, recontextualize it, and then do almost like a presentation themselves. That part was when you could see the light go on.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if you're just presenting content, you're basically doing a very expensive lunch and learn. But to have people actually be able to teach it back to you, or spit it back at you, or embody these types of principles, man, every company should go through training like that.
Well, if they have to spit it back to you, you know you've gotten through the first cognitive layer, which is understanding.
Right.
The next one is believing.
Right.
And that's a deeper layer, and it's even harder. And then embodying.
That takes more time, yeah.
Then embodying is like, okay, let's... And,
that's almost like a religious experience at that point.
Well, for me, that's a culture shift. And it's like, how do we create culture shifts in businesses?
Yeah.
And culture shifts for me are what really Denise and I are focusing on right now, because we find this is so powerful, and people are spending 50 and 60 hours at work. You know, we spend more than that because we own our own business. But it doesn't make sense to spend that much time in a culture that's negative and caustic and harmful to who you are.
Yeah.
And so if we can create a few companies that are not only what people bring their whole selves to work, but also understand that if I hire someone and pay them this rate, I don't want them just to do X. I want to have that whole person's, all their experiences, all their input, and I want them to bring the whole self to work so that I get more value out of my employees. Yeah. And the only way that's going to happen is if I let them bring their whole selves to work, and if I listen to them and adapt and listen to that and create this culture of yes and, this culture of we can build on each other. It's not top down. I'm the all-seeing CEO, and you will all
kowtow to me.
Yes, because I know everything. And it's an understanding that if I actually do listen to other people, I can get diverse opinions, and it becomes a very powerful model.
Yeah. That, well, what you described, that sounds like a place I'd want to work.
All of us want to work there.
Well, sure.
Right? Why would you want to go anyplace else where you couldn't be who you are and feel listened and heard?
Well, and we get a couple of things that... here's an example. We were at work one day. We're doing a new website. Denise just got our new website up. And I was talking to the developer, and I said, so let's say... And this is a few years back when we were first in the ground stage. And I said, let's say I want to create a new show. How do I do that on the website? Because we do all our IT, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even want to tell you what Denise does because... the amount of work she does is crazy. But he's like, well, what's the new show called? And I said, I don't know. How about Harry Potter Prov?
Right.
And we had two guys in the office. So we had a managing director in the office and a PR guy. And both of them, like, lit up. One of them stood up and, are we really doing that show? Are we? And I was like, no, it's just for... And then I was like, wait a minute. Yes, we are doing that show. And I spoke with Denise, and Denise concurred that it was a great idea. And so then we got the managing director together, and we're like, okay, let's just hold auditions. And this is a process where we're like, so I had a kind of idea, and I cast somebody who I thought looked like Harry. I cast a woman who had all the qualities of Hermione. I cast somebody who was redhead. I cast a few people that I thought would fit the roles. And I'm like, I don't know what this is going to look like yet, but I like this cast. And then we went into rehearsals, and I said, so here's my idea. Maybe we see what Harry Potter did when he wasn't fighting Voldemort. And, we'll see what, there's a lot of his time at the school that's not in the movie. Maybe we do that. And they poo-pooed it right away. Huh. They said, no, because people say, oh, that's not what Harry would do. That's not Hermione would do. What if we did kind of a fan fiction where we watch the kids of Harry Potter go to Hogwarts? That gives us a lot more freedom.
Right.
It gives us a lot more character choice. And I'm like, yes, let's do that. And...
Four years later, we've got The Heirs of Hogwarts, one of our most popular shows right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it packs them in. People love it. It is so much fun to play in. I have actually got to play in it now because it's up, so I don't have to sit back and be the third eye.
Nice.
And it's so much fun because as an improviser, you get to go up there, and I get to be a mean professor of the dark arts, or a nice one, or a weak one, or a strong one, or whatever I want to be.
Right.
And I don't know if my character is actually evil or good sometimes until the last scene.
Cool.
And it's like all of a sudden it's a reveal, and most of the time it gets revealed to you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, that's right!
And the amazing thing is, this would have never ever happened if, when we were sitting at the table with our web developer, if the entire team wouldn't have said, yes, and...
Yeah, we should do that.
Yes, and how is that going to look? And how are we going to work? How are we going to do this? And it would have never happened if it wasn't a culture and an environment that encouraged this kind of collaboration. And that's what we teach.
And actually,
and
I might
live it.
We do.
But I actually might have said, no, it's just for the site. And they might have said, no, we should do that. Right. We should totally do that. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, you get people excited about things. You're like, you have to stand up and pay attention. You have to be like, okay, people are excited. There's a connection. And you know, all of improv is about, like, laughter is the easiest way to know you've connected to the audience. But we were doing a scene last night where you could have heard a pin drop, and we knew we were connected to the audience,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
But we were just doing some serious improv. We're doing a sweet scene about a father with Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And we didn't want laughs there. You know, but you could hear the audience was listening.
Yeah. How long has the Bovine been around?
We started teaching improvisation in 1996. So we're heading up on our 20 years of teaching improv.
Nice.
And
our first show is in 96 too.
Our first show is in 96, and then we incorporated, kind of named ourselves in 97. So there's kind of like all these starts. But really we started in 96. And in 96 we found a city that was ripe for improv, and however not a real developed talent pool yet.
Yeah.
So that's why we started teaching, because we needed to develop our own talent pool.
Well, when we came here, there was no long form. There's only really one short form troupe. And so we had to teach everybody how to do these skills.
Was that like a comedy sports kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And that's can you explain the difference between the type of improv they do versus the long form that you guys tend to focus on?
Comedy sports is more like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where they get a suggestion, they play a game, and then in traditional comedy sports, there's a referee, and there's two teams that go against each other, and the audience votes for which one they like better.
It's very fun.
It's very fun. But comedy sports was really created as a spinoff of, tell me if I'm getting too deep here, was created as a spinoff of theater sports.
Okay.
And it was created in Minnesota. But a guy who said, you know, we're really not too much about improvisation, we're about comedy.
Yeah.
And we want to get laughs. So if I do this little gag, and it gets, so we do a thing called gibberish interpreter. And if I do if the person speaking gibberish is like, Grosso Petiga, Om Baiga, Dursa Petiga, Dok Mo Four, and the person on the other end says, no, they'll almost always get a laugh. And so you'll see that in a lot of comedy sports, or at least back then you would. You'd see that in a lot of comedy sports shows every single week.
Right, and not to unfunny that too much, but the incongruence of what the guy just said versus the interpretation of it. You saw that I remember that in Wayne's World.
Yeah, and you get the laugh at the expense of the scene rather than from the scene.
Right.
And so a lot of what we do with improvisation is like, we want to focus on improvisation and laughter be a byproduct rather than laughter the product.
Okay, so, and explain the name to me, Bovine Metropolis.
We are really embracing our Cowtown roots here.
Yeah.
And so, and Cowtown sounded too campy and kind of, what is that?
And we called it Cowtown Theater. We thought we'd get a lot of people here doing country and western dancing.
Yeah, we're more sophisticated than Cowtown.
Absolutely.
So we ratcheted up and Bovine Metropolis. And so that's why. So it's Cowtown. You know, Denver, I'm a native. And Eric,
sixth generation or fifth generation?
I'm five generations of Colorado native.
I'm a native too.
And I'm, nice. There you go. Yeah.
That's right.
And the second generation Denver native. Our daughters are 3 and 6. And so, but Eric moved here with his family when he was very young.
Okay.
And so he really pretty much is a native.
Wow.
And so,
4 years old, yeah.
You know, really, Colorado and Denver specifically has always been, had this internal struggle about, you know, its roots. Like, oh, we're not a cow town anymore. We've evolved. And then something will happen. Like, oh, God, yeah, we're just a cow town. And so,
like, in January, they'll shut down the streets to do a parade.
Awesome.
It is so much fun.
Right.
You know, and it's great. It's the best.
Awesome.
With the Longhorns.
Like, I love it.
Embrace that. That is so unique.
It is.
Great.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it's like Austin, Calgary, maybe.
Yeah.
So, it's wonderful.
But I can also remember when my dad was working downtown, like, and I'd come down with him when I was a little kid, and you'd walk down the street and you'd see these men in suits, half of them, and the other men would be like in big, like, white cowboy hats and bolo ties.
And cowboy boots. And
yeah, suits and boots.
Suits and boots. And, you know, I mean, that's, you know, that's our history, and I think it's rich, and I think it's wonderful. And so anyway, that's why we call it Bovine Metropolis, because we've evolved, But we're still cowtown.
And it's also a lot about what we do is we're about promoting local talent. We're about growing local talent. We're about growing the community. And, you know, we're locally owned business that's about supporting the locally owned community.
Mm-hmm. Well, 20-year track record. I mean, and the thing that's remarkable to me is you'll read a think piece about how people don't go see live theater anymore. And it sounds like you guys have created a model. I mean, you mentioned the three legs of the stool. Is it challenging to, I mean, is that true? Do people see less live theater now than they did in the past? Is that something that you guys struggle with, like getting people in the door? How do you overcome that?
Well, it's the eternal struggle any theater owner has, and it's butts and seats. And the answer is yes and no.
Okay.
It is difficult for people to go and see live theater. It's difficult as a business when you're competing against beautiful Colorado weather.
Yeah.
Mountains, skiing, the Broncos, the Nuggets, the Avalanche. Any festival going on downtown.
All the festivals.
All the festivals going on
downtown.
Craft
beer.
Craft
beer.
American festival. Sure. Beer. I mean, you name it. I could just go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And by the way, those are all the things that make Denver great.
Sure, yeah.
That's why people live here. Okay, so that's what we compete with. However, if you go two blocks just to the northwest here,
uh-huh.
and that you see the DCPA, okay?
Yep.
And they are doing so well. And they sell theater tickets for $75, $85, $95, $125, $200 a pop, and they are thriving. They're doing fantastic. And so what does that say? It says that Denver is a city that likes its cultural arts, and for us to be able to sell a $10 or $20 ticket is nothing. We only have 70 seats. So I don't feel like we have any excuses. I think that this is a city that appreciates arts.
She never lets us make excuses.
No, I don't. I do not.
That's awesome.
That's what an executive producer does. There are no excuses. Now, could it be better? Sure. Could it be easier? Sure. You know, we can now stream Netflix on our phones. So it's everywhere. And so what makes this unique? Well, seeing theater created in the moment, 5 feet in front of your chair, seeing these actors out there putting their time into this art is really fascinating. And I do believe that culturally, improvisation is becoming more a part of who we are.
And for me, it's this thing that you can't get from TV. TV's a one-way medium.
Yeah.
It's from the producer to your seat. Whereas improvisation and improvisational theater is, we get a suggestion from you, we go, we start doing, we hear you laughing, so we know that there's a connection there. So just innately, we start moving that direction. And because you're laughing, we're moving that way, it becomes this collective experience. And a lot of times you'll get people saying things like, oh my gosh, you should have been at the show last night. There was this guy who was working on a plumbing thing and a snake came out and you had to be there. And a lot of
you do have to be there. That's the whole point.
You have to be.
You have to be there. You can't experience it any other way.
Have things like the rise of Judd Apatow really helped? Because you'll read about his process where he'll turn the camera on and just let them riff. Like, they'll do it as scripted, and then they'll improvise it. So I think improv has become more into the public consciousness as a result of things like that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a feedback loop, though, because the explosion of improv in the last 30 years. Like, you know, when I was at Second City in Ohio, there was probably 300 people in the improv community in Chicago at the time.
Uh-huh.
It was a small community.
Yeah.
300 people were going through classes at Second City at that time.
That is not many.
No. Currently, I believe there's 3,000 to 5,000 in class currently at Second City and at I.O. And that's just Chicago. That doesn't count New York. And right. New York has become, you know, I want to go to UCB because that will get me a writing job on this show or that show or these, and then L.A. too. And there's improv is, so what's happened is improv is built, but it's been supported by Hollywood. It's been supported by TV. And then what's happened is kind of a feedback loop. So now they're like, we improv a lot. And so the people hear that, they want to become famous, they go to improv.
Oh, interesting.
So it becomes this thing. And, you know, the nice thing about Denver is you want to become famous in Denver, it's an outside shot. You want to improvise, you want to be in the moment, do you want to create magic in the moment? This is the place to be because there are no external distractors.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I've wanted to do this for some time. My wife and I, we made we generally don't make New Year's resolutions because that's usually a lot of sort of hand waving in our estimation. But we said we are going to do something that we've wanted to do for a long time, and we're going to actually acquire a skill. So I went through improv. I brought my friend Jason, and he's going through level two. I think he's one of your box office interns now. And so he and I were doing this, and I thought, man, we got to get back to writing. And we started writing sketches again, which we haven't written sketches in forever. And it just feels good. Like, it's for the joy of doing it.
Yeah.
Which is so great. I mean, there are skills to be had, and there are things that I can use in my business. But just the joy of coming here every Wednesday and being with a group of people who want to have fun and be with each other and almost just be silly and explore, it's great.
Well, as Denise mentioned earlier, you know, one of the big things, or one of our big tenets, is to have fun. And it's just, life's too short not to have fun. And you know, if you're here and you're just trading your time for money, you know, that's a rough road to hoe.
Right.
Just having fun, connecting with new people. I'm always fascinated by the people that walk into our doors. Yeah. I really am, because, you know,
I didn't know what to expect for who was going to be in the class.
Yeah. And I have, and I always say this, I think the hardest thing for any improv student is showing up the first day. Mm. You just have no idea. You know, like, do these people know what they're doing? Am I going to have fun? What's the instructor like? What's the environment like? You know, and yeah. So to me, when I have a student that shows up for level one, class one, first day, I'm like, bravo to you.
Yeah.
That was the hardest thing. Seriously, it's all downhill from here.
Right.
It is so much easier after this.
It's funny because I used to think, you know, Denise talked earlier about fear and how this helps you, you know, be in fear without, we always call it what, accepting the unknown gracefully.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I used to pride myself, like my level four students, my level five students, I have more marriage proposals and divorces and people moving and quitting their jobs and starting new jobs and making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I always used to pat myself on the back for like, good for you, Eric, for helping them, you know, deal with fear in their life. But, you know, Denise's point was, it's not you, it's them. They're making that step that first day.
Right.
And so they're ready. They're already ready to make that choice on that first day.
Yeah.
An exciting moment.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
And so our job is just to nurture them through that process now.
One of the things that surprised me quite a bit on the first day was the amount of people who said, I just moved to Denver. I'm new to Denver, and I thought this would be a great way to meet people. And I thought, that is brilliant.
Yeah.
If you want to meet cool, outgoing, fun, different people, this is the best way to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And gain a new skill, like
that's
you
right.
said. Yes.
And classes and troops become like second families. They
yeah.
become, you know, they're that gang that, oh, I don't have anything doing our friend, I'll just send a group text out, see if anybody wants to hang out.
Right.
It's wonderful.
When Jason and I wrote a sketch, there was one that we wrote, and I thought, these two guys in our improv class would be perfect for this. So who knows? We might be expanding the empire that way.
It's a great opportunity. It really is a nice way to connect.
I normally lead with something like this, but as we're running out of time, would you both sort of give me a brief history of how you came into improv? Like, how did it come to you? And then at what point did you go, I have to do this with my life?
Well, I'll take that one first, and then I'll let Denise deal with it next. So the way improv came to me was I was 19. I didn't go to college right away.
Uh-huh.
I made pizzas at Chuck E. Cheese. But my mind started spinning.
How was that?
It was just how it sounds. I only had to dress up as a rat twice.
He calls it the rat.
But the once I...
It is a rat.
This is a side story. Can I do a side story? So one time there's the World Gym was next door to us. And
nice.
they're like, that Arnold Schwarzenegger guy from who just done Conan the Barbarian. He's like, from Conan the Barbarian is next door. Go get a picture of the rat next to Arnold. So I put on the rat suit, and the rat suit's big, and I'm a big guy. So I'm like a 7'2" giant Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
And I go walking into World Gym, and Arnold's there, and Arnold's not tall. He's about the size and height of my wife. He's
like 5'9", 5'10".
No, he's tiny. He's like 5'6". I'm 5'9". I don't know. But I'm 6'4", and I'm 7'2", in a rat suit. Okay, so I've got, I'm a 7'2".
So you're like Shaq.
And I'm just like walking up to him, and I am photobombing. I'm the original photobomber, and I'm just in the background, just like, as they're taking all these publicity shots, I'm just posing with my hands on the side, putting my hand out, and Arnold's like, what the hell is this rat going? And so I, that's one of my stories. So anyways, I was working at Chuck E. Cheese, and... And I was like, okay, I know I don't want to make pizzas the rest of my life. So what do I want to do? And I had done some comedy. I'd done some comedy on the air. I did, I'd done some writing. I'd also done some, we had a radio show every week, a comedy radio show every week that we'd write for every week. And I'd done some performing. And I was in school plays and stuff. And I said, okay, I don't want to be off stage. I like that live thing. I don't want to be me, though. I want to be a character. I don't want to do stand-up. I don't want to be me. But I don't want to have to do a play, and I don't want to have to do words. I want to do my own words, but I'd like to be characters. And so
you want to do your own words, but not be yourself.
Exactly.
Wow.
And there, he didn't have the name for it yet. Yeah. He didn't know what it was.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, well, and we didn't have the internets where you could just put in a bunch of like random things and the answer comes up. So I said, okay, well, I'll go to college and I'll create this thing. I said, I went to Colorado State University, and I said, they had a communication program, and they had emphasis on radio and television management and radio and television, and they had a theater program. Well, I had never heard of extemporaneous theater before, but I'd heard of extemporaneous speaking.
Like through forensics, like that kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I knew that if I got a speech degree, I could do extemporaneous speaking, and along with the radio and television, that was more in line with what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I did the degree in that. I got that. And
did
then,
you get a speech degree from Colorado State University?
I did.
I have two of them.
Nice.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife also has two. That's where we met. We met in grad school in the speech program, and she was a debater up there. She was sixth in the nation in debate. So
nice.
So we're
I lettered in debate at CSU.
We're very simpatico here.
Did you get
here.
A scholarship?
Yeah, I got a scholarship from the debate team at CSU.
So did she.
Yeah, it's great.
That's spectacular. Fantastic. Keep going.
So after college, I got a job right out of college doing, I was a shooter editor for a local news channel.
Cool.
So I was one of 2% of my major that actually got a job in my field. But I didn't like it much, and I didn't realize why I didn't like it. And three of my four best friends moved to Chicago after college. So I moved to Chicago, and I'm at Chicago. I don't have a job. And I'm like, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
And the same list came up. Like, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do this. And I was always funny, luckily. And one of my friends, I was making her laugh, and she's like, oh, you've got to do Second City. And her roommate's like, oh, you've got to do Players Workshop, then Second City.
Okay.
And so that's what I did. And my friend Renee Albert was like, you've got to do it. So I started taking classes. And then first class, first rehearsal, I got up on stage. I was also living with a friend of mine who was a radical Zen Buddhist. And so I was into Zen at the time, too. Yeah. And as soon as I got on stage, that first exercise, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what I want.
Thank God I found it.
Yeah. And it was... It's like, this is embodiment. Here I am in the being in the moment on stage as a character, not myself. And I'm like, this is it. And so that was over a quarter century ago.
Wow.
Then I moved to, I did Improv Olympic. I did Annoyance Theater. I did, Second City. I did I.O. I did some acting. I did whatever I could do. I started my own troupes. And eventually I got not disenchanted with Chicago. I'm from Colorado, so I'm used to 300 days of sunshine a year.
Yeah.
And I'm not used to those winters where the sun goes away in October and comes back in April.
Right.
And it was too much for me.
And there's just the black stuff on the side of the highway that never goes away.
Ice, and then it's just like, it's crazy.
My family's from Chicago, so I know well.
And it just wasn't, I was like, well, I can stay here, because my friend's like, stay. Second City's, there's heat, a lot of heat on you right now, and Second City's talking about casting you, and I'm like, I was miserable.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I can stay here and be miserable for an outside shot of fame, or I can do improvisation and go back home where I'll be happy.
Where I love it.
And I love it, and I'm more myself.
Yeah.
I started moving away from who I was a little bit in Chicago.
Sure.
So I came back here, and like the first thing I did was Metanese.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, and that really worked well. And then I started putting up shows. through the help of my friend Kevin Hart. He introduced me to a little theater.
Kevin Hart.
No,
different one.
Yeah. Bob, he introduced me to Bob Wells, and we started producing shows. And Denise was, when I first started, Denise was doing box office, but...
Just really supporting, helping, really.
Well, yeah, but at first, because yeah. Then she's like, you know, we do songs, and she's like, you have no choreography. And she did theater in high school.
Yeah.
And she's like, let me help with the choreography. And I'm like, yes, because totally. I have no choreography. So I'm like, so she started helping with, like, songs. She started helping with choreography. And then she started running the business, which is not my strong point. But she had an economics degree from Colorado State, so she's really smart.
Nice.
And so... She started running the business, but also helping with the stage and improv. And I'll let you jump in.
And so it just evolved from there. And So what we did is we grew and grew and grew, and then decided that we were going to do this with our lives full time. And so we both got to the point where we could both leave our corporate jobs. And then the big opportunity came when this space became available on Champa. And that was in 2000.
But we'd been looking for a space for 2 years.
For a long time.
Wow.
And so it became available. It was an existing theater. And so it became available, and the owner of the building took a big chance on us and let us lease it. And we are now here 15 and a half years later, married now, two children, and we're not starving. And we actually, I think, have health insurance.
No, I don't think anybody would look at me and think I'm starving. Yeah, we have health insurance.
Let me tell you, that was a really big step for us. To be able to pay for our own health insurance as business owners.
That was the second biggest step for me. The biggest step was getting someone to do janitorial.
Yeah. I mean, it's big time.
First 7 years I was doing all the janitorial.
It's big time. And so that's how we've evolved to who we are. And it's become this amazing process where we've helped seed the community, create the community, be part of the community, and the community is now growing and ebbing and flowing in different directions, and it's fantastic. It's been quite the ride.
And people are moving from here to Chicago and killing it in Chicago, and nice. Now some people are moving back.
And LA and New York, too. I mean, they're going everywhere. And so it's fantastic. It's been a great ride, and there are still mountains to move.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you guys are a part of the landscape where Denver's becoming more recognized for its comedy with people like, you know, Adam Caton Holland, The Growlix, T.J. Miller, just a whole group of folks.
And my buddy Sam Talent.
Sam Talent, yeah, Fine Gentleman's Club.
He's a grad here. He's a grad.
He is?
Yeah.
Actually, Sam and T.J. did a set here. I think they've done two sets here.
Oh, cool. So, I did, I judged an open screen night. I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but it was hosted by the Fine Gentleman's Club. And I was on a panel with Merrill Wiles and Heather Snow.
Yeah.
And so now comes the time of the show, I've taken enough of your time, where you guys shamelessly plug away. Tell us where people can find Bovine Metropolis on the web, on physical location, plug any shows you guys are doing, whatever you want to plug, do it now.
Bovine Metropolis Theater is an improv theater in Denver. We're in the theater district. And we are the region's largest improv school and theater.
We have shows currently 7 nights a week, but on average 6 nights a week. And they are almost always improvisational, except we do 2 sketch shows a year.
Okay.
And always have a Christmas sketch show.
Nice.
We have because we've been here 15 years and doing Christmas shows for 20, we have people that sometimes just come once a year for the Christmas sketch show. You know, we have Heirs of Hogwarts, which is great. We have a... what's the new show I'm working on right now? Oh, yeah, Silence of the Bovine, which opens in October.
It's scary.
Yeah, it's actually, comedy. We had a 10-year-old come last year, and he didn't want to go in for the second act because he was too scary. But I told him there's no scary stuff in the second act. He was like, okay. So,
we also host another show, which is one of our signature shows. It's called Denver's Next Improv Star. And this is going to be opening up this next spring. It's 7th year. And what we do is it's a competition-based show where someone gets eliminated every week.
Wow.
And then we end up with Denver's Next Improv Star. And it's fascinating. It is amazing. It is definitely one of our most successful shows.
And then there's On the Spot that's been playing for 15 years. And that's not only popular here at the theater, but it's also popular for corporations.
Yeah.
We're doing a holiday show. We'd like you to do some entertainment. On the Spot's the show we bring usually.
It's so much fun. It's also the show that we take to universities for new student orientation. So it's a very well-liked show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've done it for, I don't know, 7, 8 major universities in town here in Fort Collins. And
so it's a fantastic show. And then last, and actually probably our biggest unexplored frontier, is using improvisation for businesses and creating amazing teams and collaboration. So I'd say there's just so many wonderful things we're doing with improvisation.
Yeah, I think it's we do 20 corporate trainings about a year, 20, 30. What do you think?
At least,
feel like that's the biggest area for growth.
Is sure,
the
of course.
Training because it is what we're passionate about. It's what we do best, and really, it's where the biggest need is.
Yeah. No. Changing the culture. You have changing generational sort of demographics. I would say the need is great. Where can people find you on the web?
We are at bovinemetropolis.com.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, Eric, Denise, this was a real pleasure for me. I loved going through level one. I think you guys are doing exceptional work, and I'm just pleased as punch to be able to highlight you.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for episode 74 of the John of All Trades podcast. Thank you, Eric Ferrone. Thank you, Denise Mays, for being on the show and for telling us all about improv and how your business came to be. It's a wonderful business. I'll say it again. I completed level one, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. Great way to get on stage, great way to shed some inhibitions, pick up some new skills. And if you're new in town, great way to meet awesome people. So bovinemetropolis.com is the website. There you can find their show schedule, info about their classes. Hey, maybe you have a company, maybe you want to do some training. It's all right there, bovinemetropolis.com. That'll do it for this week. What else can I say? I loved this episode, but we got a new one coming right behind it, and I love that one too. So how do you find it? Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, J-O-A-T pod for both. That's how you find us. We tease out the episodes on Monday. You get a little sneak preview, a little special look at what this week's episode's going to be. Then we launch it on Wednesday. And as I said, as always, you can find it on the John of All Trades website. John of All Trades is a production of Deft Communications. Check us out on the web, DEFTCOM.US. And until we see you back here Monday for next week's episode teaser, say goodnight, Gracie.